Hi, this is Rico Provasoli sitting here with Eliana Obadia, also known as
The Writer's Midwife.
And we're here discussing our work together in the editorial process of producing my third novel, Running on Empty, A Zen Carpenter's Tale.
And what a process it was.
So it was such an adventure, and we're here to share with the reader some of the points of our process together. So one of the things we learned was respecting each other's point of view. And I'm a Zen Buddhist, and Eliana is a...
Well, I'd say a follower of Jesus.
Right, a Christian. And part of the process was finding a commonality of respecting the dual vision of Zen and Christianity.
It was a great... and wonderful gift to be able to work through and really listen to each other and hear our individual perspectives and see that at their root, it wasn't a bland sameness. There were distinctions and differences, but that they complemented each other and that we could see through the other's eyes in a way that we might not have been able to without that kind of dialogue. And as an author, I just found Rico just so open and willing to hear, to consider different perspectives as I was trying to help him bring clarity to his vision, not mine, but his.
And I really feel after, this is our second book that we've worked on together, and I see how particularly precise is the choice of your name, of your editorial service, The Writer's Midwife, because that's actually what I experience, that here's this baby, this idea, this vision, and I write, I think I wrote for at least a year, 18 months, to bring it to a point where it was ready for you to look at, and yet it was the birthing process demanded such interaction with my writing, my creativity, where you urged me, you coaxed me, you teased out the very best of not only just my languaging, but sensitivity to what the reader would understand when he read that paragraph, or what does that mean to the general reader, someone who's not a Zen Buddhist?
Indeed. You know, one of the most delightful parts of the editing process for me, and it just happened again and again with Rico, is we would kind of have this tussle about a particular sentence because it wasn't quite there, but I knew what he was trying to get at. And I would make a suggestion, and he'd go, no, that's not quite it either. And then somehow between the two of us, we would come up with le mot juste, or just the right way to say it. And it's like a little epiphany right then. It was like, bingo, that's it. And staying with that process and supporting each other to come up with the best that we can, it's just a delicious thing.
And that reminds me of one of the examples of that was... Carl is the protagonist of this book, and he's been sitting Zen for years and years and years, and the omniscient narrator says Carl's attraction and dedication to Zen was to achieve a mental stability, and that his mysterious Satori or enlightenment was a distinct second place. Well, Eliana said...
I thought what he was trying to do was make a distinction that was larger than what was actually meant. And so I put in a query to change distinct maybe to distant. And through our process together, I got to see the actual distinction that he was making by choosing that word and not the other. So
Right. Sometimes
it was an enlivening process because often we would come up with a third word or phrase that neither of us had thought of to begin with that was exactly on the point.
And we very much honored a quote from Tom Robbins, who was speaking at a writer's conference. Tom Robbins, author of Even Call Girls Get the Blues and Another Roadside Attraction, who said sometimes he would spend 4 to 5 hours to find just the right word to bring that paragraph alive, to make it sing. And we did that together, maybe not 4 or 5 hours in on our time together, but I would dig in and go looking for that perfect word. And there was such a symphony of working with you.
That was wonderful. He would send back another draft, and I'd go, yes, that's exactly what I was hoping for. I didn't know what it would be, but I knew that when I saw it and it rang that bell, that's it. That is the thing. I think something about the process is interesting to tell people, because now with things like Skype and especially Zoom, which is what we use, we're able to look at the manuscript on the screen as we're in different states. I'm in Arizona, he's in California, and look and go through line by line and rewrite certain sections. And it was really rewarding to do that. And we get to see the character of Carl developing and coming into multi dimensions just through even the slightest changes of how the plot is developing. And we were able to do that on the phone. It's an alchemical process between author and editor. Enrico is one of the most open and egoless, humble people that I have worked with. So I just wanted everyone to know that.
But sometimes he wasn't egoless, because I remember we got into kind of a feisty hour-long discussion.
Yeah, yes.
I don't know if we would say discussion, or we wouldn't say fight, but we got pretty heated up and
built
up.
Yeah, we went around the block with that one.
And specifically it was there's a scene in the book where Carl the protagonist is with his Roshi. Roshi is a Zen master, and another senior monk. And there's a incident where a local in the property adjacent to the monastery drives through the road and kicks up a dust storm. And it seemed like it really affected the breathing and health of the old Roshi. And Carl is quite indignant and said, you know, how can those people do that and intentionally try and suffocate you? And the Roshi is saying, no, that's your ego, conditioned mind interpreting. The guy was just out for a ride, and maybe he didn't see us, maybe he did, but there's dust, and trucks kick up dust, and there's no spin. Life, there's nothing wrong. Life is as it is. There's no spin. But Eliana insisted that...
Well, I was looking at it from what I thought at the time was an important wider context. And having actually been a student of Zen myself for a number of years, I always found this an issue that was really worthy of a deep consideration, this acceptance of what is as is. And what does that mean when there is intense and actual suffering? Does one just say, it's all okay? And so we went around about that, and I just felt that it came to a place where we could really hear each other. And it brought in the whole aspect of Carl's character that had to do with his own kind of concern for other people and wanting to serve them. That it's not about just leaving everything and everyone as it is, but there is a way in the whole scheme of things as being able to see a certain type of perfection in what is. And so we came to, I thought, a really good understanding.
Right. And I think I'm recalling one of the aspects of that discussion is what I think was the coup de grace, what finally helped me to convince my beloved editor what I was trying to get at was... We live in the San Francisco area where there's thousands and thousands of hours of strong, strong winds coming across the Pacific. And on Ocean Beach at the edge of San Francisco, there are cedar trees. Now, most cedar trees in Golden Gate Park, a mile or two away, are hundreds of feet and they grow tall and straight towards the sky. But on the coast, they've been assaulted by these strong 30 and 40 mile an hour winds days and days and weeks at a time, and they have bent under the assault, under the force of the wind. And so what Zen would say, there's nothing wrong with a crooked bent tree. There's nothing wrong with it's not worse or less beautiful than the tall, magnificent, straight cedar tree. It's just a tree.
I'll say amen to that.
Right. So we finally found a common ground on saying, oh, Zen is accepting life as it is without spin. The spin being the conditioned mind response, the canned response that's not really feeling the moment as much as repeating a inherited reactivity to what is so.
Indeed, you know, one of the main themes, as all the readers will discover, is the struggle with the superego, the inner critic. And that is a whole area of inquiry and inner work that we've both been interested in for a number of years. And that in a way, I think, is the core of the book. And, you know, Rico could have taken the easy way out in that one, and he didn't. He was willing to let his character kind of fall into the ditch again and again and again, in all these attempts to be able to love and accept himself, and then something would happen and his character would just not be able to hold in his heart the very understanding of acceptance of what is in his own being, in his own life. And so he would fall into suffering again and again. So the reader goes there and comes out. It's like this set of hills and valleys in his experience in relation to the inner critic. And we really questioned whether it was just too much to have him fall in that many times. But if you're true to life, then that is actually the way it is on the path. And I'd like you to maybe say something about that.
Well, yes, and it brings the final triumph of coming to terms with that he and he only was the cause of his suffering. He was the one that was feeding the process of the superego inner critic attacking him again and again and again. There was no winning. If he didn't say something, he was damned. If he did say something, he was damned. And he got to see through the agony and the ecstasy of, wow, it is me participating in this suffering.
The other aspect that I think is really worth noting here is the humor that is in this book. There is a character who turned out to be really one of my favorite characters, and that's Leonid. And I'd like you to say something about that, because he just brought in an incredibly beautiful mix of wisdom and compassion and humor that I think just brightens this pathway that includes a fair amount of suffering. So what about Leonid?
I have no idea where he came from. It's like we've had a few dozen beta readers report that their favorite character in the book was Leonid, and where did he come from, Rico, and how? I still have no idea. And yet he appeared, and he really carried the torch with, talk about a faithful friend. Every time Carl fell down in the pits of suffering and self-loathing, was Leonid says, in his very distinct but intentionally bad English, as kind of a comedy line, to help Carl pull himself back up. So and he becomes a vehicle for Zen wisdom, even more than the Roshi, even more than the abbot of the monastery where Zen. Where the Zen students had trained so often in the book. And the other part of the story is that the priest, there's a priest that shows up, and a priest had trained in Japan for 30 years as a Maryknoll missionary, but he also becomes an agent for Carl's, should we say, transformation, awakening, self-realization.
Exactly, and the reason why that is so deeply compelling is because it's in the context of the story of Carl's mother, who has taken ill and is dying toward the end of the book. And we don't want to give too much away on that, but the process that Carl goes through in caring for her, sitting across from this Catholic priest, and the way that they share their understandings of life and death and contemplation and the path are so beautiful. I don't think I've ever read anything like that in spiritual literature. It just brings both of those traditions home in a way that illuminates the best of each, but doesn't muddle them, as some things tend to do.
And what I want to bring attention to is how we dovetailed in our points of view of religion and philosophy in such a way that through your insight, we were able to demystify Zen by using the principles of the Christian contemplatives that have been around for 1,000 years and the basic, I wouldn't say mantra, but a very frequent prayer that the contemplatives would use again and again and again and again was, Lord, make there less of me to make room for more of thee.
Amen.
And that was Carl's process, whereas he was learning emptiness. The title of the book, Running on Empty, is about, being empty of my desires, my demands, my machinations, my little schemes. Can I be with what is as it is and allow, some people would call it the face of God, grace, true nature, to arise. And that process is explained in such a vivid way and presented for the reader to say, wait a second, I kind of get that, and Zen doesn't seem so far out anymore.
And the, you know, in a climate where there's a certain, I have to say, difficulty seeing the brilliance and the depth of the Christian path, I felt really honored. And we could have disagreements about specifics in relation to the priest character and what he believes and what he says. But the entire interaction between the two of them brings in the denouement, really, of the whole story, which we are going to leave unsaid, aren't we?
We are. So we're going to wrap this up soon. Another point is that Carl also realizes somehow, some part of him awakens that, wait a second, you know, Zen is not just about sitting in front of a blank wall. Zen is about seeing how I can help people in the world. And on a repeated basis, he becomes involved with social activism and social programs in his community. And you finesse that in such a way to develop the humanness of Carl.
Because it can be a very self-referential path if it's all about me and my enlightenment and my suffering. But Carl has a lot more dimension than that. And you see how his compassion for the young character, Alex, comes through. It's just it's a beautiful thing. And so it rounds out the experience of Carl's life. And I was just really grateful that Alex got born at the time of this book.
Right. And that we finally see that Carl is not some weirdo. He's just a regular guy, a regular Joe, trying to make a living, trying to make sense of life, trying to handle the aging process. And we feel for him in so many different ways. So we have to wind up now. Is there anything you want to say in conclusion?
I just want to say thank you for a magnificent collaboration. It was honestly a privilege and a delight to help you birth that baby, because it's a wonderful baby.
Yeah, well, we sure hope people read it and have similar feelings about it. So thank you all for listening, and thank you, Eliana Obadia, the writer's midwife, for showing up. And this is Rigo Provasoli signing off.